As always, it's good to be here. I actually was the guy who was going up to space, but I had a scheduling conflict, so I couldn't quite make it. But next time you told me he was going to get me up there.
Well, I mean, if you hadn't committed to this show, you would have been. But
there's that, too.
Yeah.
There's that, too. I'm not going to leave you guys out when I'm floating around Neptune or wherever it is that it went.
All right, so a bookend for T.J. Watt. What did you think of the Ingram signing?
I think, legitimately, it's an excellent move. I think it's great strategically for the Steelers because while I think there will be snaps that he takes where he's lined up opposite of T.J. Watt, I think there are plenty of opportunities for a creative defensive coordinator to find a way to get Watt, Ingram, and Alex Highsmith on the field at the same time. Right. I think Ingram, if he showed anything in college and certainly through to the pros, he can play inside or out. I mean, I'm not saying that he needs to get down in a four-point stance over the nose guard, but he can crash into the A-gap. He can play inside, depending on the situation. I'm not saying that Vince Williams' job is in trouble or anything like that, but we saw Bud Dupree play heads up, play over the center in different situations last year and in the past. I think Ingram can do that. He brings kind of a sense of authority where he can crash into your guard or your center and blow up the line from the inside out. Now imagine if you put Highsmith and Watt on the edge and you've got your three linemen down the way that you normally would, Cam Hayward, Stephon Tuitt. Mm-hmm. If you have that set up with Ingram behind that, behind Alualu, who'd be the nose tackle in that situation, you can come from anywhere with a lot of big guys that can move pretty fast, and T.J. Watt is one of them. That's a nasty defensive setup. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of teams that really could stop that consistently. It's situational. It's not something you would do every down.
Mm-hmm.
But Ingram is at the same time, if you put him out on the edge, Ingram is definitely a better run defender than Highsmith is. A young player in his own right who's going to continue to improve, and you're excited about that development. But Ingram brings a lot of things to a team that really could use kind of a versatile chess piece, you know, an inside-out kind of pass-rushing linebacker. I think they can get a lot of run out of him in a situation type of role, which I think is what they signed him to play.
He had a four-year, $64 million deal with the Chargers that expired after the 2020 season. Why so long before anybody did sign him? I mean, I know he was banged up last year, but why so long? Because that's what kind of took me back a bit. I mean, he's the kind of guy you would think that if you're going to do this, you would have done it in June.
I think, and this is the kind of stuff that you never really know, but I think it's a combination of teams knowing that all the pandemic stuff, the salary cap jumping way below and coming back up, teams not having perhaps as much space as they're used to, just due to a lack of rollover space from the previous year. It drives the market down, perhaps artificially. And then you also have to factor, there really isn't much to gain from a veteran player like Ingram signing for minicamp. You know, I think if anything, Ingram signing a couple days ahead of training camp is probably more Ingram's choice than it is a team. If $4 million is what the final price was, let's say the $4 million would have gotten the deal done in June, the same as it would have in late July, Ingram's probably, he probably would have waited. You know, he doesn't really have much incentive to sign anywhere. He's going to kind of wait and field his offers. We just saw it today, Cam Akers of the Rams, a good young running back,
right,
tore his Achilles. He's out for the year. If that's an edge rusher, then at that point, Melvin Ingram is worth a lot more money,
right,
than what he just signed for the Steelers. So you're going to wait until the last possible minute if you are a valued commodity to see if there is an opportunity that drives his price up. And if there isn't, it's not like there isn't going to be, you know, a willing market for him. And I think that's really what it kind of came down to. The talent was definitely there. I think a team can justify saying, well, we're not going to pay you $5.5 million. We'll give you $4 million, maybe give you some incentives. But overall, the need was there for the Steelers. Ingram needed the opportunity to get snaps and to get film if he wants to capitalize on his ability. He's certainly a good player. I don't think there's any doubt about that. if he wants a chance to get one more big extension, he's going to have to show up and show out in a place like Pittsburgh, where they're going to rack up sacks. I mean, they've sacked the quarterback quite a bit over the last 5 years. They're going to do it again this year. So with that, I think it's the right place, it's the right opportunity, and they just kind of needed to wait on the price to reveal itself in the market. I think that's what happened.
Yeah. No question. With training camp coming up, have the Steelers revealed what kind of protocols they have to go through?
I don't know. That kind of thing is usually something you hear at the league level. I don't know. I think it's an excellent question for a lot of teams right now. Everything we hear now is they're one of the teams that are above 85% compliance, right, as far as vaccination goes. Will it be the same as last year? One would think not really, but also the real differing factor, I think, with the Steelers has been the presence of fans, and you're not really going to get that as much at Heinz Field. You can back the fans way away from everybody else.
Right, yeah.
Kind of regulate them.
Right.
Yeah, I think, by and large, they're seizing an opportunity to kind of, focus on more of the work than the fan involvement with training camp, as we've discussed previously. I don't think it would be as restrictive, perhaps, as it was last year, but whatever it is that they're going to do, I think they're going to really kind of keep under lock and key and let the league sort of take it as a PR opportunity and release the information as they would want it to be released. I don't think they want original reporting on a lot of this stuff that's outside of their own kind of mouthpiece. So I would imagine NFL Network will have the scoop on that a day or two in training camp, and maybe the Steelers are one of the teams that they look at. But top to bottom, I'm willing to bet we won't hear a whole lot specifically about what they have to go through for a little bit yet, at least, maybe from the early teams reporting to camp.
When you look at today's game, there's a lot of nickel and dime being played. Do you like the versatility of the Steelers roster in the secondary that can allow them to place five and six defensive backs at one point?
Where we sit today, I would say no, because they have a lot of guys that are literally nickel and dimes. I mean, I'm not sure about any of them. I understand that people are all excited about James Pierre. They must have seen more in his 27 NFL snaps than I did. I don't know. That doesn't mean that he's a dog. It doesn't mean that he's a goat. It just means we really don't have a whole lot to go on. We can like the idea of the prospect, because we've seen it. Mike Hilton's a great story. I still think he was underpaid. I still don't think he's been paid his worth as an NFL player. He rose up through the ranks from really kind of the same spot that James Pierre was in. If James Pierre can step up and be a Mike Hilton player for this team this year, then I'm not sure why the Steelers can't draft players to do well, or why they'd even bother. Just keep signing undrafted guys. They're pretty good for you. We'll see what happens with him. And really, as we sit right now, not knowing what other moves they might make, I find it hard to believe they're not going to find another veteran corner to come in and compete. But as it sits right now, you're looking at Joe Hayden, a veteran. I wouldn't necessarily say injury plagued, but you never know with an older cornerback. It's an athletic position. It's hard to stay on top of that. Cam Sutton, the guy that they believe in so much, they gave a 2-year contract extension to, and James Pierre, who, to this point, his greatest accomplishment in the NFL, outside of staying on the roster, is beating out Justin Lane, a guy that I don't think, has the greatest shot of making the team.
Right.
So I don't know what they're going to do. It's wide open. Now, one could say that the great part of that is 31 other teams don't know what they're going to do, and they can reveal something that they haven't done that they've intelligently planned on and are looking to reveal as the season goes on. But as we sit now, there's a lot of guys that we just don't really know anything about, and I still think they'll bring in somebody, but one injury is really going to hurt that unit top to bottom. They don't have any depth among their backups, let alone their starters. So it's a group to watch, and I think it's going to be a group that that'll be pretty hot and cold. I think it's a position they're going to want to address in the draft and free agency next year. I don't think they had enough picks and enough money to do it the way they would have wanted this year, but I think they had more holes than they had, you know, opportunities to fill them this offseason. So we'll see how they shake out, as Mike Tomlin would say, when they get under the stadium lights. We'll see what types of players they are. But for now, a lot of question marks for sure.
I had a conversation today with one of the five greatest linebackers in the history of the NFL. Someone had it. When Jack Ham played, he had Lambert, they had Andy Russell, you know, then eventually other guys like Lauren Taves and so forth. What do you think the role is of the linebacker in today's NFL?
I think a linebacker today is closer to a safety, whereas back in that day it was probably closer to a defensive lineman. The game is getting pushed back vertically just due to the noticeable improvement at the lowest level of a quarterback playing in the NFL. The prolification of receivers. I was just talking to a buddy of mine the other day about this. It's unbelievable how good college receivers are today compared to where they were even 15 years ago.
Agreed.
I would say this, and I the receiver position is what I really watched and scouted. I would say in my time, my short tenure of this, one of the best college receivers I ever saw at the time was Odell Beckham.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him in college. I thought the sky's the limit with this kid. LSU does a great job coaching their receivers. I think I saw four of them in a draft that were better than Beckham. And three of them played on the same team. It's like, where are these guys coming from? I mean, this generation, they've noticed how many more receivers there are on the field and how many more of them can be successful in the NFL on 5-6 targets a game, something like that. Justin Jefferson of the Vikings, another LSU guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most contradictory thing ever, but one of the best college receivers I've ever seen. A player that I honestly felt was legitimate to go in that draft in the 20s the way he did. And I'm not at all surprised with a 100-catch, 1,400-yard season from a rookie. And you got to keep in mind, that does not happen in the history of the NFL. Very few are doing that, yet we're seeing more and more of these guys coming into the pros. And most of them come from Alabama or LSU, but
right.
There are a lot of studs. I mean, you look at Chase Claypool. We talked about him going into it. I didn't think Claypool was really going to see the field a whole lot as a rookie.
Yeah, neither
did
I.
They cut 20 pounds off of him, and all of a sudden it's like, my God, this guy's a legit all-route target.
He's
a phenomenal player.
Completely.
The first catch that he made was something that 15 years ago you only saw high-end veterans make. What they're teaching them and how they're developing them in college has been amazing. So for me, getting back to the point of the linebackers, it's you have to cover so many more guys on the field. And with that, as Steelers fans certainly know, covering them with inside linebackers in the slot isn't the greatest option that you've ever seen. So to be an inside linebacker, to be a dominant inside linebacker, you've got to be a three-down inside linebacker. And if you look back, with all due respect to Jack Ham, who was, I agree 1,000% with you, one of the best that we've ever seen, he was way ahead of his time.
Yes.
Ray Lewis was a three-down middle linebacker at a point in which they weren't like him at all. And Ray Lewis got chased off the field at the end of his career because he was too big. You know, that says an extraordinary amount of the evolution of the game and where it's going. It's a position that, honestly, I think there might be one of them coming in a defense soon. There'll be seven defensive backs, one linebacker, and then four, you know, basically edge players, two playing inside. That's the next defense. So your pure NASCAR pass rush with deep coverage ability. I think that's where everything is going.
All right, so now let's flip that to the offensive side. When Ben Roethlisberger, now, you know, you see everything, of course, in a two-minute drill. Should the Steelers be doing a little bit more during the game to speed the game up and, like, pick a drive each quarter to play that way? Should they think about doing that?
I think all teams should, at the very least, practice like that. I think to some degree you're going to have to do that. The trick is you got to keep in mind, anytime that you try to play hurry up or you really try to go up-tempo, you have to have a lot of experience, and
yes,
as well as you have to have excellent coaching to develop the kind of plan and the kind of offense that you want to run. Everybody's got to be on the same page of that. For the Steelers this year, it's great to have the quarterback, and I've said this a bunch, and I'll continue to say it. Ben Roethlisberger is an underrated cerebral quarterback. He's one of the more intelligent passers in the game, and he's been that way for a decade. He's really, really smart. There's a lot you can do with him. There's a lot you can do when you have Maurkice Pouncey under center with that. You got a rookie, most likely. You've got two tackles who are playing new positions to them this year. You've got a second-year left guard, and you've got a right guard who's new to your team. To get all of that on the same page with a rookie running back, you're going to see 12 personnel this year. You're going to have a rookie tight end with that as well, an experienced group of receivers. But there are a lot of new faces. I'll say this. I think Mike Tomlin can, you know, kind of make another notch on his legacy as far as the job that he's done with the personnel that he's been given if they're able to play up-tempo. They're able to play a hurry-up offense and be successful with it. You know, again, one incomplete pass, one guy screwing up, slows all that down. But if they're able to do that and have success with it, they will have accomplished something pretty remarkable in this training camp period. If they're able to build into that, which I think that they can and they're going to have to, that will only help your offense. I think that the less that you would allow a defense to substitute and the more that you can put on film, the more able to just tempo you to death. It has nothing to do with our scheme. We can just out-personnel you. The better off of a team you're going to be, because that's really what it is. It's not the play call at that point. It's who you have on the field. When you had Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, they could run up tempo all day. And on top of that, they had an experienced and very talented offensive line. Are they there this year? I don't know. I think they're trying to build for that soon, and whoever kind of inherits the throne from Roethlisberger next year might have the benefit of that on their side. But it'll be tough for them to do this year. I know that.
Well, and remember, what's the risk of it? You go three and out, you only run off 30 seconds off the clock, and the defense is back out there. So, I mean, it's not a perfect world, and you have to take that into account when you make the decision to do it. Sir?
Exactly. There's a lot that goes into that.
Right. A lot that goes in. And that's the part people forget. You know, hey, make a move. Okay, put them on their heels. Well, yeah, in theory, that's great. But you also have to take in what's the unintended consequence. What happens if you go three and out?
You're going to quickly set up third and long. You don't want that.
And a defense that may need some time in the sideline isn't getting any. So there's a balancing act that has to take place. Sir, always well balanced when we talk to you. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.